Welcome to season 3 of Conversations with Coaches. This is a stakeholder-centered coaching production where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. I'm Brandon Murgard, your host for the show. This season, we go deep into the case study library to discuss the real-life challenges of leaders and the coaches who help them succeed. As an added bonus, we're giving away the latest installment of our case study library, which includes case study summaries, show notes from each episode, and ways you can connect with the guest. Get your copy today at mgscc.net/case-studies. Today, we're featuring Bill Auxierre, PhD, a pioneer in shaping the leadership of rural healthcare systems. Bill's work with a Central California hospital showcases a remarkable journey from an environment deficient in trust to a culture of accountability and communication. By using stakeholder-centered coaching, Bill not only improved the organization's health, but also set a new gold standard for leadership in rural health. Come on in as we unravel the strategies that turned around a struggling hospital and left a lasting impact on the community it serves. Join us and let's find out more about the client.
So my work is focused on rural hospitals, and I had a particular hospital in Central California, a rural hospital that was looking for a cultural transformation of the hospital. And that was really due to a lack of trust within the organization as well as the community due to high turnover at both the executive level and the provider level. A lot of people don't realize the dire straits that rural hospitals are in because there's been over 150 rural hospitals around the United States that have closed since 2010. And about a third of those hospitals are at high risk of closing. And so if there's not trust in the community about that hospital, that's going to be detrimental to the community in a couple of different ways. One, obviously, is the level of healthcare. If the rural hospital closes, you're going to have to go to the next town over to get that healthcare. But what a lot of people don't think about is usually those rural hospitals are the largest employer in that community. So not only does it have an impact on the healthcare, it also has an impact on the economy of those rural hospitals. So that's why this work is so important. And in particular for this hospital, they were in that exact same boat. We wanted to make sure that they were very viable because they were struggling because of that lack of trust. They were struggling financially. They were struggling to recruit the people that they needed with the expertise to make a difference in that rural community.
And Bill, when we talk about rural, can we kind of put a box around this so everyone in the audience has a clear idea of what rural means in this context?
Yeah, so there are actual definitions, official definitions of what makes rural, but here's my favorite definition. How close is the nearest Walmart store? And if the closest Walmart store is in the community, well, it may be rural, but maybe not too. Whereas if the closest Walmart store is 60 miles away, you're in a rural community.
I like it. The measurement of Walmart distance is perfect. Okay. So we've got your work focuses on rural hospitals. And just because I have to plug this, Bill, do you know anyone out there who is specifically talking about the challenges facing rural hospitals and how people can learn more about that?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people focused on rural healthcare. Rural America is a vast, you know, sometimes it's referred to as flyover country, right? But 20% of the population in the United States lives in a rural area. And quite often, I think, you know, we were talking earlier, Brandon, you like to vacation in a rural area. And so whether you live in rural or not, odds are you're going to go to a rural area. And if something happens, if you have a car wreck, or you break your leg skiing, fall down in a hole while you're hiking somewhere, you want to make sure you're taken care of, right? And that's why it's so important. So a lot of the work I do is through the National Rural Health Association, which is an association organization, a nonprofit, but they have 22,000 members made up of a real cross-section of people working in rural America. And regardless of what their title is or what their role is or what they do, they all have this common theme. What can we do to help rural Americans have well-being in their lives. So we're always creating that voice. Next week, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. to meet with Marco Rubio's office to talk about what policies are pending, because when they pass policies at the federal level, sometimes they help those large urban and metropolitan hospitals to the detriment of small rural hospitals, because it's a different world.
So we have this organization who has a detriment right now. They've got an issue with trust. They're experiencing high turnover. They reached out to you. What does that look like? Did they find you through your website? Did they find you through your radio show, through your podcast?
Originally, it's through my podcast. I started Rural Health Leadership Radio as a podcast back in the summer of 2016. And the philosophy of my podcast, well, our mission statement is to improve the world by engaging rural health leaders in conversations, learning, and research. And the context of each interview, because like you, we do an interview format with different people working in rural health care, and we do it once a week. But one of my favorite quotes comes from Galileo. Galileo said that you cannot teach a man anything. You can only help him find it within himself. And so that actually forms part of my philosophical foundation around my coaching, as well as my podcast, by getting all these different people. It's not me on the podcast telling people what they need to do. It's me getting people to share what they're doing to help them, to share best practices, kind of like what you're doing, Brandon. So the CEO was a listener of the podcast and reached out to me, and that's how we connected originally. And then it resulted in us working together in this cultural transformation project.
And as we get into, you know, what did you do with the organization? How was the coaching structured? Tell me the website that our listeners can go to and find out more about your podcast.
The podcast is at www.rhlradio.com. RHL is in Rural Health Leadership Radio.com.
You've got a voice for radio. I love it. I'm already excited to get in and listen to this. The organization calls you. They say, Bill, we need help. What do you tell them? How do you approach this?
Well, the one thing that I always do is that, you know, let me just back up a little bit and tell you my relationship with Marshall Goldsmith. When I was a graduate student working on my PhD in leadership, guess who one of our guest lecturers was? Marshall Goldsmith. So I met Marshall and I was enamored by everything that he was saying. And when I found out that he offered a certification in coaching, I was all in. And so he's the one that got me going. And something that he said in that process really spoke to me. And I'm sure anybody who knows Marshall has heard him say this, that no one wants to invest in coaching. They want to invest in results. And that's exactly what was happening at this facility. They wanted to invest in a cultural transformation. They were willing to spend time and money to transform the culture of their organization. So team stakeholder-centered coaching was a tool that I used. So it wasn't a team stakeholder-centered coaching engagement. It was a cultural transformation engagement. And that was so important to focus on the results of what they were looking for.
Beautiful. I love that. And that had to have resonated with them immediately. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Plus, I went in with, and I learned this from Marshall, with the no growth, no fee guarantee. If we were going to embark on this adventure together, which was a substantial investment, especially for a small rural hospital, you know, I was willing to put my money where my mouth was, just like Marshall taught me to do with that no growth, no fee guarantee. So that was important to me in establishing that relationship right off the bat with them.
Wonderful. And for our listeners who aren't familiar with our no growth, no fee policy, essentially we're using our mini survey tool to measure results from the stakeholder perspective on a -3 to +3 scale every 3 to 6 months. And our standard is a +1 average or greater. And if you don't receive that, you don't pay us. We haven't been effective at what we were hired to do. And this makes the whole relationship completely different. So tell me about that. How did this no growth, no fee policy affect your relationship from the outset with the client?
Not at all from my point of view. And I didn't promote it that that was our deal. You know, the CEO who signed the contract with me, she knew that. But I didn't promote it to any of the other participants because I wanted to, there to be a trust factor there. That was something that they were suffering with, was trust. So I wanted to establish trust to with them to make sure that we were on the same page and engaged with each other. And so you have to keep in mind, we started this project right at the beginning of the calendar year of 2021. We entered into this engagement, we actually signed the contract in September of 2020. Now, hopefully you can remember what was going on in the year 2020, especially in healthcare. There was a pandemic taking place and wreaking havoc with healthcare around the world, not just the United States and not just rural America. So the CEO of this hospital had the foresight to know that, you know, things are going to settle down someday from the pandemic, but we have to tackle this problem now. We can't wait any longer. But, you know, prior to this, the hospital was had financial issues, which is very common among rural hospitals. They had the high turnover rate that I already mentioned at the executive level and the provider level. So, you know, they had a lot of things going on that me establishing trust with them was critical to the element. Now, if I would have just charged them a straight fee, I'm sure they would have been okay with that. But I wanted to go above and beyond what was required to set an example and put a stake in the sand that, look, I'm willing to do this. And if you don't grow, you don't owe me anything. But I knew that they were going to grow.
Give us an overview of kind of how you structured this engagement, because you're doing team versus a one-on-one. What did that look like?
Yeah. So for me, team stakeholder-centered coaching, what it is, it's a combination of workshops and coaching calls. So we had a kickoff workshop where I presented the concept of team stakeholder-centered around the concept of organizational culture. And what's interesting too is that the culture work, organizational culture work that I do is based on Michael E. Stallard's book, A Connection Culture. And so in his book, he talks about if you want to change the culture of your organization, he suggests what he refers to as a vision, value, and voice model. And for me, that screamed team stakeholder-centered coaching, because the vision is I have them create a team goal as well as individual goals. There's your vision. Value. When it comes to value, that goal should answer the question, what one thing, if we improved on, would make a big impact? Or what one thing, if I improved on, would make a big impact? I don't ask them to set a goal around something that's going to have a little impact or a medium impact. It has to have a big impact. So that gives the value. And then the voice portion of that model is giving feedback and feed forward. It's teaching them to be honest with each other, because in rural America, they have a hard time being honest with each other. They like to sugarcoat things, because quite often, if you're giving somebody good feedback or a great suggestion, hey, you know what? That's pretty easy. It's when you're giving them feedback that they may not want to hear, but they need to hear, or you're making a suggestion with some feed forward that they're probably not going to like. The thing that is in rule, there's no anonymity in rule. Whoever you're talking to, their spouse, their significant other, their mom, their dad, their brother, their sister, could be your kid's third grade teacher, you know, or you go to church together, or your kids are on the same sports team or whatever. There's all this interconnected because you're in a small community. And so that makes it a little more challenging. So people, oh, you did such a nice job, Bill. When in fact, no, I didn't. Come on, be honest with me. You might say you did a nice job. Okay, give me three reasons why it was nice. So we teach that concept to them, which for some people is very eye-opening. For some people, it's very difficult. But it's all part of the process. So the workshops, when we do this stakeholder assessment, that 360 type assessment, you know, we always ask each other, okay, what are Brandon's top two strengths And what one thing, if Brandon improved on, would make a big impact? And then we compile that for all the participants that are in the team stakeholder-centered coaching process. And so at this hospital, we started with the executive leadership team, or as they refer to themselves as the administrative leadership team. So we collected all that data. Plus, we also asked them an additional question. What do you want to get out of this program? What do you want to get out of the cultural transformation program? So we created that list, as well as putting the stakeholder assessments together for their individual review. And so that gave us, what do you want to get out of this program? That gave us a list of things that we could focus our workshops on, because all the workshops had something to do with leadership. But, you know, you can always tweak them here and there to make sure you're incorporating that. Or if it's not something that we can address in a workshop, it's something that can be addressed on those one-on-one coaching calls. So basically, we do one workshop per month and one 45-minute coaching call per month. And in the workshops, every third month, it would be a live in-person workshop where I would actually go to the hospital, see them in person. In between the 2 months in between, it would just be a 1 hour Zoom workshop, a virtual workshop. So a combination of in-person 3 hour workshops, virtual 1 hour workshops, and then the one-on-one coaching calls each month. So that was a process. And then we did the mini surveys periodically to see how we were doing. And I would always ask them for feedback as well. And every once in a while, I'd send an email reminder, who did you ask for feed forward from this week, or who did you give feed forward to this week, that sort of thing. So that was pretty much the process, workshops and coaching calls, along with the mini survey roughly every 3 to 4 months.
Okay. And on the backside of that feedback, what was the particular goal that they were focused on as a team?
So for the, in phase one, that's when we worked for with the administrative leadership team, and their goal was effective and timely communication of goals, expectations, success, and failures, which are fundamental to the health system's administrative team's accountability. So there's a lot in that goal, but it was all around communication of goals, communication of expectations, communication of successes, communication of failures. And then they tied it up with, well, and that's fundamental to what we're supposed to be doing if we are an accountable leadership team. So normally I would try to get them to tweak it a little bit to make it a little bit more concise, but hey, it is their goal. So I was willing to live with that goal and try to help do everything I could to help them achieve that goal. And then each individual was asked to set an individual goal that was important to them, that would make a difference for them, but which would also contribute to the team goal.
Okay. So they're working on communication, communicate to create accountability ultimately to their constituents. And you'd ran phase one with the administrative leadership team. How long did that last?
Well, originally it was a 12-month agreement, but the CEO asked to extend it for another 3 months. So it's totally a 15-month engagement. And the reason for that was there was a turnover. One of the executives did retire during that period, and they hired a new executive to take their place. And plus, with some of the residual effects of COVID that they were dealing with, they felt like people were distracted perhaps a bit at the beginning, and maybe if we extended a few months. So that's why it was extended, but they were very, very happy with the results that we got.
Well, that must have been quite a culture shock to have a new executive jump right into the middle of a 15-month team coaching engagement. Good for them. Let's talk results. So you've got 15 months. That's approximately 4 mini surveys. And again, we're measuring on a -3 to +3 scale. So tell me, what did the mini survey scores look like over time?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. We did 4 mini surveys over that period of time. And like you said, you know, the lowest you can get is a -3. The highest you can get is a +3. And as I tell them, anything that's a positive number is good, right? Because that's movement in the right direction. Their very first mini survey was a 1.8. Their second mini survey was 1.4. Their third mini survey was a 2.0. And their final survey was a 2.5, which I was very happy. And they couldn't understand my jubilation. And that's when I finally told them, it's because I get paid.
Yes, no growth, no fee. It changes the game. It changes the relationship. It changes the profession. But these scores are great. So am I correct in understanding that the first mini survey would have been approximately 3 to 4 months?
Yes, it was.
Wow. Okay. I can just say, 1.4 at 6 months, that's great. That's exactly what people should be shooting for. 1.8 after 3 months, that is insanely high, especially for a team. That's excellent.
Yeah, because they were being pushed to communicate with each other. It's amazing. In the smallest of organizations, it's amazing how many silos exist and how people don't, they only communicate when they need something done, which is very much a culture of indifference, right? Because what you care about is checking the boxes, getting the tasks done, and people are a means to an end. So I was forcing them to have deeper conversations than that. And guess what? They found out they kind of liked that. But it was still a little bit scary, especially more so with some people than others. But it was scary when the CEO said, hey, I'm trying to be a better listener. How am I doing?
Yeah, nowhere to hide.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, another thing I want to flag up to our audience members here is that the whole purpose behind this -3 to +3 is that you have leadership is not a destination. You're not looking to be a 10 out of 10 leader. You're looking to be an improving continuously leader. So a 1.8 at month 3 or 4 to a 1.4 at the subsequent measure point means that they have moved 1.8 the first time. And then how much change have you seen in the past 3 months? 1.4. That's continuous change. This is really powerful stuff. And then to have 2.5 by the end of the engagement, 2.0, 2.5, like these are very, very positive scores to receive. And I understand you continued going with more phases after phase one. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So the administrative leadership team was so impressed with the results they got. They said, we need to take this to more of our leaders in the organization. So they asked me if I would be willing to work with the next level of directors or supervisors or managers at the organization. I was more than willing to do that. So we entered into another 12-month agreement. And so one of the twists that the CEO did, though, is people in those positions, whether they were directors, supervisors, they had to apply to get into the program, which gave them a cue as to what their level of interest was in becoming a leader, a better leader in the organization. I was told some of the people, some of the participants were voluntold, but the majority of them had applied to get into the program. And they heard the administrative leadership team talking so positively about what they got out of the program. That was pretty cool. And we had another group to go after them.
Yeah, it's always fun to ask a group of people, hey, who wants to be involved in this? Raise your hand. Like, not very many hands stay down by the end of a 60-second waiting period.
Right, and so we did essentially the same thing with the second group. We asked them to set a team goal. And so their team goal it's a pretty cool goal. I thought their team goal is we are modeling a culture of teamwork, reliability, and trustworthiness throughout the health system. So they were focused in on culture. They were focused in on teamwork, reliability, and trustworthiness. I thought that was an incredible goal for them to come up with, after the administrative team had gone through the program.
Beautiful. Yeah. And how did it turn out? So you worked with them for another 12 months. What was the mini survey scores?
Yeah. So we only got 3 mini surveys in with this group. On the first one, their score was a cumulative 1.0. Mini survey number 2, 1.4. And then their third and final survey, 7.5.
Excellent.
Yes, so great continuous growth.
Well, they must have been, was this group also very proud of what they did, or were they apprehensive thinking, oh, 1.75, what does that really mean?
No, and again, you know, you have to interpret, you know, let them know, okay, remember, the lowest you can get is a -3, the highest you can get is a +3, and if it's a positive number, it's good. So they were all good with that, and they were very proud of that. And one of the things I do with the team coaching as well is we have a final workshop, and that's in person. I go there in person. And for the final workshop, I ask everyone to make a 5-minute presentation. It can't be 4 minutes. It can't be 6 minutes. It has to be 5 minutes. It's part of the old professor coming out in me on this, because as I share with them, for a leader, it's important to be good at concise communication. You need to communicate concisely, because there's an old Mark Twain quote that says, if you want me to give a presentation, I'm good to go. If it has to be 5 minutes long, I need 2 weeks to prepare. Because it's hard to condense what you want to say in a very concise framework. So concise communication is important, as our public speaking skills are important. So they have to give a 5-minute presentation of what their big takeaway was from the coach's training, that from the cultural transformation program. And when we did that, boy, oh boy, some of those presentations were incredible, just incredible. In phase one, where we had the administrative team, one of the things that came to light was that there was the administrator of the clinic and the chief medical officer. Man, did they butt heads. They were butting heads all the time. And through the coaching process, they realized that the administrator of the clinics was serving the clinic employees. The chief medical officer was serving the physicians and providers, which that those two all aren't always in alignment. And when they realize, you know, we both want the same thing, but we're going about it in different ways, that was a huge epiphany for them. And guess what? They were able to work together and make a difference. And the CEO likes to talk about her relationships with some of the employees, how it changed and morphed over time by being able to be honest with each other with feedback and feed forward. In the phase two session, there was one of the department directors that shared that when they first came to the hospital, they didn't feel like anybody cared about them as a person, that all they cared about is what their department could do, and when they screwed up, how they were screwing things up around there. And they were in tears talking about how they realized now that they were appreciated and valued for, yes, for what the department did, but also they as an individual were valued by everybody in the room for what they were bringing to the table. But the one that got to me the most was there was this one department director, large, gruffy guy. I mean, before he got into healthcare, he worked at a sawmill. Okay. So that kind of tells you a little bit about what you might imagine he isn't. And he got very emotional, very choked up in his presentation because he shared a story. He talked about, I was always encouraging them to share their goal, not just with each other, but anybody that they whose opinion they value, but in particular, the administrative leadership team, because they'd been through this. They knew all about it. So he went to the CEO and he said, my goal is, do you have any suggestions? And she gave him some feed forward. But then he said, then she shocked me. She said, you know, my goal is, how am I doing? And he got so choked up. He said, I've never had a CEO at any place I've worked ask me for my opinion on how they were doing on a goal. He said, that was incredible, because it breaks down these barriers. It fosters trust. It creates a cultural transformation that can literally move mountains in the healthcare space. And then the last story I'll share with you about one of the participants, there was another person in the program who was very, he's ex-military, not that there's anything wrong with ex-military people, but he always said, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, he would not call you Brandon. He would call you Mr. or Sir or whatever, you know, and very formal in that regard. So when he did his final presentation, he said that when he heard, he was all for, he applied to get in and he got in. And then he said, then I came to the first workshop and I found out that I had to have a coaching call each month with somebody and talk to them. And then he said, no offense, Bill, but I don't necessarily like your teaching style in the workshops either. But he said, if I was ready to drop out. And he said, this has been one of the best things that have ever happened to me. And so after we were done, he volunteered once a month. He was going to get everybody that had been through the program together at a local restaurant to continue the conversations that had been started. So that was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. We had a cultural transformation, Brandon.
You did, and it wasn't coaching. I love that perspective that you bring, and you know, something that's just so fascinating about these presentations and just asking people at the end of the engagement, what did you get out of this? Words that never come up: uncomfortable, too vulnerable, unpleasant. It's always engaging. It's always collaborative. It's working together. But when people like this, this individual you're speaking of earlier, looks at the program, they think, I have to tell people what I'm working on. I have to ask them for their input. I have to say thank you. Like, guys, this costs nothing, and it will absolutely drive your bottom line. So coming back to you, Bill, let's hear your 5-minute presentation. What did you get from the engagement? What did you learn? What were your key takeaways?
Team stakeholder-centered coaching works. I mean, it's but it's not team stakeholder-centered coaching. It's team stakeholder-centered coaching is a tool. But it's a very, very effective tool. You know, what one thing, if your hospital improved on, would make a big impact? Well, whatever the answer to that question is, we can help you get there. And team stakeholder-centered coaching is the tool that we use, because team stakeholder-centered coaching works.
Yeah, you know, Frank Wagner, co-founder of stakeholder-centered coaching, describes the process as an operating system. He says it's just a tool. It's an operating system. It's not going to do a lot. By itself, it will get you the results that you need, but you can pour any other methodologies or any other angles, tools, procedures into it. But it's you know, it's a hammer. You want to break stuff, grab the hammer, knock yourself out. And that's exactly what it is. So team stakeholder-centered coaching works. What else?
Well, Frank knows what he's talking about. He's the one who taught me, Frank and Chris Coffey, may he rest in peace, and Mike McCartney. So those are the guys that taught me how to do this, and I appreciate it so much. You know, there's, I think that one of the things that I learned too is, you know, how the CEO wanted to do phase two, right? And we are talking about phase three now. And some of the individuals that were involved in the team stakeholder-centered coaching process are still getting coaching calls, one-on-one executive coaching calls. So it's not just a one-and-done sort of thing, because stakeholder-centered coaching works, not just team stakeholder-centered coaching, but stakeholder-centered coaching works. And it makes a difference. It made a difference for this rural community. Notice I said community, not the hospital, because their engagement with the community has improved dramatically. And I can't take credit for that through the team stakeholder-centered coaching, but it certainly contributed towards that. And it's making a difference for a small rural community in Central California right now.
It's the habits. I like to tell, when I'm working with clients, I'll tell them, you can call us coaching if you want. I'm just going to help you build these habits. If you build the habit of telling people what you want to get better at, asking them how you get better at it, telling them how you intend to get better at it, and then ask them, did you do the things you intended to do? You don't need me. And I'll be the first to tell you, you don't need a coach, because what we do, all that we do is bridge that knowing what to do and doing what needs to be done gap. It's easy. It's simple, but it's not ever going to be easy. So good. Now, if I was an up and coming coach and I was sitting down in the classroom of Dr. Bill, and I say, Bill, tell me, what are the things I need to know to be a coach? What have you taken away from this engagement that our audience can action themselves?
Be curious just a little longer.
Be curious just a little. Expand on that for me, if you will. I think I've got the gist, but go a bit deeper.
Yeah, you know, so it's, I can't tell you how many times when I've had those one-on-one coaching calls that people want me to give them advice. You know, what would you do if you were in my situation, Bill? Be curious a little longer. Why are you asking me that? Why would you want my opinion? I'm not you. I'm not in your situation. What's going on? And going back to that Galileo quote, you know, basically everyone has the answer within themselves. There's a great book called The Advice Trap. I forget who the author is, but you know, the advice trap is detrimental to everybody. And in fact, that was one of the things that the CEO benefited from too, because everyone was always coming to the CEO asking for advice on how to fix something to the point where they were overwhelmed by and frustrated, you know, because I want to build leaders, not people that just come to me to ask me for advice. And so I take that same philosophy to the coaching that we can help people solve any problem. We can't solve the problem, but we can help them solve the problem. So it's a matter of serving, a matter of being curious just a little longer, because when you think too often, I think the questions that we ask, they may uncover a symptom, but they don't uncover the problem. And so one of my million-dollar questions is, after you've asked all the questions of what's going on, Brandon, what do you want to talk about today? You know, why do you want to talk about that? Why is that important for you to discuss today? You know, you ask those questions. And once you feel like you've got all the questions you've answered, ask this question. Here's the million-dollar question. What else? Because when you say what else, that's when you usually get the real answer to the question. And that's just by being curious a little longer.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think that was Michael Bungay Stanier is, if I recall correctly, fellow 100 Coaches member who wrote the advice trap. And I think he's got a TEDx talk on it, either that or The Coaching Habit. Both of them are excellent. I recommend anyone listening to check both of those out. At the end of most engagements, what I tend to see is coaches declare victory and move on. And they move on a bit too quickly. As you said, they think of it as a one and done. What advice would you have for someone who wants to change that based on the work that you did with this particular rural health system?
Yeah, you know, I would go back, Brandon, to what Marshall says. You know, people don't want to invest in coaching. They want to invest in results. And so what are the results they're looking for? And sometimes that provides an opportunity to continue that coaching engagement because that's what happened to me. They want to take what they experienced and share that with others. So it's not a one and done. It's a one and keep going. It's not that you want to outstay your welcome. Don't hear the wrong thing here. But there's plenty of work that can be done within any size organization because everybody's a leader to some degree or another. So the more you can get everyone on board with the concept that we teach in team stakeholder-centered coaching or stakeholder-centered coaching for that matter, the more you can teach that to as many people as possible, the more that organization is going to be able to sustain that change and keep it going, because we're talking about creating a coaching culture, right? I know that, I think I've heard you say it. I've heard Marshall say it. I've heard others say it. It's very simple, but it ain't easy. So we want to make it easy. And, you know, with this particular hospital too, we've gone to conferences and presented case studies on the results of this process. So other rural hospital leaders heard about this, and I've gotten engagements from that, you know, and it keeps them engaged by, if they're going to be talking about it in presentations, and we've made videos about it with them on video, you know, it helps in ensconce that feedback, feed forward team coaching concept, that process. It changes the culture of the organization. So look at the big picture, look at the long picture. Don't look at it as a one and done or one and done and ask for a referral. Keep it going. There's plenty of work that needs to be done and plenty of work that needs to be done.
Thank you so much, Bill, for being on the show. Before we head out, if I am a rural healthcare system, if I'm a team looking to improve our organizational culture, go through transformation of any kind, how could I get in touch with you, follow your story, listen to your radio show?
The best way is to reach out through my website, which is, I say quite simply, but my name isn't that easy to spell. It's my first and last name.com, BillAuxier.com. That's BillAuxier.com.
Bill Auxier shared a moving story of expanding the leadership capabilities of a rural hospital, proving that effective leadership and open communication can indeed rebuild trust and foster a positive organizational culture. Bill's dedication to both improving healthcare systems and enhancing the community's well-being is truly inspirational. We hope this episode encourages you to embrace change and lead with integrity. Remember, all the case studies of this season are available for download at mgscc.net/case-studies. The link can also be found in the episode description. And if you'd like to better understand the foundations of leveraging stakeholders and measuring results in your coaching, then join the free training program, Foundations of Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we share the philosophies and frameworks that guarantee improved leadership effectiveness in 12 months or less. You can register for the free course at mgscc.net/foundations-course. Until next time, this has been another episode of Conversations with Coaches by Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Thank you for joining the conversation and stay tuned for more stories of leadership transformation.